Oi, you. It's time for another episode of Dorothy and the Dealer. Let's tune into the conversation.
Michi Moo, good morning.
Guten Tag. I'm very well. How are you going?
I'm good.
You seem a little bit stifled, mate. You seem like a little bit, you know, a bit of a cat on a hot tin roof. Are you all right?
No.
Lack of sleep last night?
100% lack of sleep. Yeah. I had no idea what was in
had
the
a bad
air.
Sleep as well. Sort of Ange, sort of Tash.
Yes, but it's about me. We're talking about me.
Sorry, go on, yeah.
you nutter. I'm really excited because this is our first ever, I think, podcast with a guest that we've recorded in our new studio.
Oh, wow.
Isn't that cool? Yeah, and nice, our guest is a beautiful client of ours who we've known for many years and I think we just love her story.
We refer to her story
a lot.
Quite often, yeah.
And
talk about Sam quite a bit.
And yeah, so we're really excited to have you here. Sam, welcome. Hello.
Thank
welcome
you.
To Dorothy the Dealer. How are you?
I am amazingly good, even though I'm stuck in lockdown Victoria. Yeah.
Charming. Yeah. Let's not go down that rabbit hole because that could take
no,
an
we won't go down that
week.
Rabbit hole.
I love that rabbit hole.
No, I know. No, I'm not saying we can't. Yeah. So, Sam.
Yeah, let me ask a question. Do you walk around with a packet of baby wipes wiping everything? You know.
No, Matea's not in nappies anymore and she doesn't puke everywhere anymore, so I don't need to do that.
Right. Okay.
There you go.
No, I was just thinking your premier might make it mandatory that you have to walk around and wipe everything.
You never know what he's going to make
mandatory next. What's he going to do next?
Well, that's the thing. Living in the uncertainty of not knowing what Dictator Dan is going to do next is quite interesting.
So we always like to start off with a song and we'd like to know, you know, what's the song that's at the forefront of your mind?
Your favourite song or something that you're thinking about at the moment?
Because of my daughter and sticking it in my head.
Yeah.
Baby
shark do-do-do-do-do-do, baby shark do-do-do-do-do-do, baby shark do-do-do-do-do, the actions, the shark. Granny shark do-do-do-do-do, mama shark do-do-do-do.
This is the song out of all the songs we've ever had on our podcast that you actually know.
Mama shark. Granny Shark. Yeah. Granny Shark.
Our listeners are going to be just like.
You can pick it up. Look, no teeth on Granny Shark.
I know. But our listeners are going to be like.
No teeth.
They can't see that. But our listeners are going to be like, fuck you guys for getting that into
but
my
those
head.
Of you that haven't had kids yet, you just know what you're in for. Right?
Exactly.
You know you're in for it.
Wait till you're up at 3 o'clock in the morning to go to the toilet and that's playing through your mind.
Oh, excellent.
I got one of my buddies, Sam, is about to have a kid. He's like 44 years old, you know, so he really waited till late in life. And he's like, he's convinced that everything's just going to go back to normal when the baby turns up. And I'm like,
what? I went through the same.
What? Yeah, I know.
I went through the same. I'm like, I'm not going to do this and I'm going to do this and everything's going to work and everything's going to be great.
She has plans for you.
Yeah, I took great joy the other night out at dinner telling him that his life was over. I was like, your life's over, dude. And he's like, what do you mean? Well, what I mean is that you know how life is right now? Yeah, it's over forever. It'll never be the same again.
You know what? All his friends, Sam, every time they meet up, there's a new guy that someone that hasn't had kids. They're like, you should have kids.
Oh, we all sit there going, man, you should have kids.
You
like,
have
honestly,
kids.
You should just get amongst it.
As soon as that person gets pregnant, they're like, suck it. Every friend that wasn't pregnant got that treatment.
Anyway.
I love you.
Yeah.
I know.
He's charming.
I know.
Yeah.
So, Sam, how long ago did we meet? It's been a while, hasn't it?
Gosh, I'm thinking maybe 2012.
Yeah, it's been around there, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Do you want to tell people a little bit about, because you've got some really cool stuff to talk about, and I know Mitch is just so excited to talk to you about some of this stuff, and our clients are going to love it. But before we get stuck into the rabbit hole stuff, I just want to just share a little bit of your story so that, like, people can know how we met and a little bit about who you are, because your story is so huge. We share it all the time and, just fill us in, will you?
You know, before I got on stage, I was told that you were in the audience. Did you not know? I was literally told that
like
this, yeah, that this girl Sam is in the audience and she's had some huge stuff happen and she's really excited to listen to you guys and she's studying this because I think you were studying psych at the time.
I had finished studying psych and I was doing metaphysical science, but right. I had been on staff at Landmark Education.
As well, that's yeah, right, yeah.
One of the leaders there.
Yeah, yeah. And so, yeah, I was excited. I love when people are in the audience like that because I know, because people are like, oh, my God, you know, you're going to have a tough one there. You're going to have to. And it's like, no. If this person is exactly where they know they're meant to be, they will hear exactly what it is we're trying to say.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So which will
share,
set them free.
Share.
Okay. So, yeah, well, obviously I just let the cat out of the bag that I was on staff at Landmark Education. So I had done every single one of their programs and I was even an introduction leader and a coach. And I still had not released things. Like I was still struggling and putting like a face on it, like to try and make it look like everything was great and my life was all handled when really it was just so not. Mm. And my friend Sharon, who had already done some of your work, she had introduced me to you guys and she goes, you've got to do it because it's like it's not just for the head, it's for the heart.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. I'm like, okay, I'm in.
Mm-hmm.
I'm in.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember thinking at one point, Mitch, I'm either going to love you or I'm going to hate you. When you were talking about perceived sexual abuse,
yeah,
I'm thinking, oh, I think I'm going to hate this guy.
Yeah.
And I was like, no, I'm here and I'm here to be free of this crap, so I'm going to give you the benefit of the doubt and I'm going to listen.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm so glad that you took me through it and said, answer me without knee-jerking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because that was the thing that got me through, like it broke through my knee-jerk reaction and my barriers, which was all of my protection.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, long story short, obviously, you know, I had been dealing with childhood sexual abuse,
mm-hmm.
And the ramifications of that, even to the point where I'd had to have reconstructive surgery,
mm-hmm.
Because I had adhesions so bad from the scar tissue of the abuse that my ovaries and my were fused to my bowel, so was my uterus, and my uterus wall was fused together, shut.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So they had to do multiple surgeries to basically kind of laser burn it all unadhered,
mm-hmm.
which created so much scar tissue that they said I would never, ever be able to carry a viable pregnancy to term.
Mm-hmm.
And that was from three separate surgeons. So that alone was hard enough dealing with the physical, but dealing with the emotional, like I carried shame
mm-hmm.
and I tick-tocked between being really angry and really repressed and sad to being like wearing the abuse as like a badge of honor, like I'm a survivor mm-hmm. and like, so it was basically just the other side of the coin, really,
mm-hmm.
trying to empower a great big steaming pile of dog do.
Yeah.
So you used to TikTok between the two.
Yes. And I would TikTok from being, I don't want to be near men, to being really promiscuous.
Mm.
Yeah.
Like, and I would just keep TikToking between the two. It was running my life instead of me running my life.
Mm-hmm.
And then going through relationships with anew, and it was you, Milsey, that took me through the process. And it was just the experience because, like, I was there. I had intended to deal with the issues with my father, not mm-hmm. with my mother.
Yeah.
And it really came up the issues with my mother needed to be dealt with first. And going through that, I really, like, I got to see my mother instead of as this woman who had allowed me to be tortured and abused, to be a woman who actually did whatever she could to love me so much to have me be the person that I am today.
Mm-hmm.
And it still makes me tear up a bit with gratitude for her.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like the whole, all of the pain of it just was completely gone in that moment. And I still don't have words to explain how it just went, but it did.
Mm-hmm.
It just, and I now have this beautiful relationship with my mum.
Mm-hmm.
And even with my father, like that's all, it's all been done. And I had a conversation with my dad. He actually apologized to me and said that he saw himself as such a monster.
Mm-hmm.
And in that moment, I was able to just say, Dad, it's over. I forgive you.
Mm-hmm.
And now some people would be like, oh my God, how could you forgive him? But that was an act of grace and love and release, not only for myself, but for him and for other generations, mm-hmm. like backwards and forward.
Mm-hmm.
I have my daughter now, mm-hmm. which is another miracle in itself, and she has a beautiful relationship with her grandfather. Mm-hmm. Now, I have spoken with him and I have said, you know, I trust that you will be the father, the grandfather to her that you were never able to be the father to me.
Mm-hmm.
However, I will always be watching you because you don't poke a sleeping bear, right?
That's right.
And they have a beautiful relationship, and I can see that he will occasionally look at me with just misty eyes like, thank you
mm-hmm.
for giving me a second chance.
Mm-hmm.
And I know at every step of the way that my daughter is safe mm-hmm. with him
mm-hmm.
and I don't need to muddy their relationship with what has happened in the past
mm-hmm.
because he did what he needed to do to get me to be the person who I am today.
Mm-hmm.
I think
I'm not sure. Do you have any questions?
No, I just wanted to say something about it. I'm taking a minute. I remember the power of that moment, and I remember the intensity of what happened there. But I know that for people listening, or for anybody who would hear something like that, I think that that can sound like a contradiction, or it can sound like it's something that is not possible. And I want to firstly just confirm for anyone listening, I suppose, that in saying what we've just said, we didn't make, or you didn't make, what happened to you right.
No.
And we didn't make what happened to you wrong. Would you agree?
Yes.
That what you did is you realised that something had happened to you. And you had been living your life trying to band-aid that up. I remember you using those words, that the stuff that you had done before was great because it kind of helped you deal. Yep. But the difference here was that it wasn't just it wasn't a band-aid. It was like understanding that you could choose how to deal with that. This happened. You can't go back and change what happened. But you can change and transform how you view what happened and how you therefore go and live the rest of your life. And
yes.
I feel like that's an important distinction to make for, I suppose, people listening who are hearing that somebody can have that scenario happen and be totally clear with it to the degree where that you are, and that you obviously are by the way you speak.
But I think Sam, when I met you, I think I could see that. I mean, you'd studied psychology, you were a landmark forum presenter, you knew that there was something to see and something to get that you weren't getting. And, you know, you just didn't want to spend the rest of your life pretending and being pissed off and angry underneath everything. Because I say to people all the time, the reason people are pissed off and angry is because they're pissed off and angry. They don't want to be pissed off and angry. So outside of what they call their history, they know that there's a destiny that awaits them as long as they're willing to stop and look and find love in the place they're adamant it doesn't exist. Because, mm-hmm. and the only way to find that love is you have to become truthful, and the truth sets you free. And the truth is, okay, who am I today? Mm. In all facets, who am I today in all values and all characteristics and all traits based on what went on? How can I find the blessing in what occurred? Because if I find a blessing in what occurred, then I changed the history and I changed the future mystery for everybody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it seemed that, you know, it seemed that you were willing and wanting to see that. So when I remember sitting down with you and I said, I need you to put all that aside. The fact that you're a psychologist, all that sort of stuff. Because when I'm dealing with a psychologist, they're generally trying to help everybody else because they're trying to fucking work out themselves. And I said, I need you to put the psychologist aside and I need to talk to the little girl. I need to talk to Sam. And I remember, you know, that took a lot of courage, but you also had the emotional intelligence to get, you know, that what we were talking about was real. There's a breakthrough waiting as long as you're willing to look. And in doing that, what, you know, because we create the world around us, right? So if we don't want to have children, there's a hidden part of us doesn't want to have children. So that goes into a reticular activating system and all the doctors turn up to say, hey, fucking guess what? You're not going to be able to have children based on 10 years of corrective surgery. But as soon as you change, the possibilities around you become infinite. You're now in charge of your reality because, you know, ultimately that freedom that comes frees your future, frees everything. And in you stopping, just bear with me 2 seconds, in you stopping and seeing that, sorry, we're just now. Okay. In you stopping and seeing that, that seemed to be what happened for you. The transformation occurred in that moment, but it took a lot of balls. I mean, I know that there's people out there thinking, you know, oh my God, you know, this is crazy. But at the end of the day, there's an innate knowing inside of every person that's out there that they don't want their history to destroy their destiny. Because that's what happens with perceived abuse cases. And when you know, I use the word perceived for a specific reason. First off, because I know it pisses people off. People go, right, that's my job. I need to piss you off because I need you to understand that I know what I'm talking about. I've seen it over and over and over again in an infinite number of times. I've watched it occur over and over and over again where people, you know, get it. But when I'm talking about perceptions, what I'm talking about is you take in information, you superposition that information, and that becomes your perceived reality. But it's only part of your perceived reality because it's only half of what occurred. And when you see the whole of what occurred, you see the wholesomeness in the event, you see the love in the event, and then you're able to transcend the torment.
Yeah, you put it into much better words than I could because I couldn't I couldn't quite articulate how it worked. But, yeah, all I know is it did. Yeah. And
so what do you think – so explain then what you think has changed as in what happened – I don't know how. What the question I suppose I'm trying to ask is that there was such a massive turnaround in where you were at. Do you know what I mean? Like, what do you think? What do you think that's about? Like, what do you think you can? What do you think happened? Kind of thing.
Probably the best way to describe it is it's like I was cloaked or shrouded in all of the weight of everything that I identified with as what happened to me.
Yeah. Mm.
And it was like I carried it around like I was coloured and tainted by it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So it tainted and coloured, and you mentioned the reticular activating system.
Mm-hmm.
It did. It coloured my perception of everything within life. So I went through life with the filter of damaged goods,
mm-hmm.
not good enough, not lovable,
mm-hmm.
something inherently wrong with me because this happened.
Yeah.
So I then, you know, choices I made, opportunities that I saw and didn't see was all because of what I was cloaked and shrouded with. And going through the equilibration process, just it was like that cloak that shroud was pulled away, removed from me. Like I was stripped bare, but at the same time as being stripped bare, it was like I was finally free.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
To just like stripped bare of all of the damn filters that were limiting me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I could actually see what was right there in front of me. Okay, it hasn't removed my past, but it has removed the taint of that past mm-hmm. and the pain of that past.
Mm-hmm.
But I was never able to speak about having been sexually abused without feeling a whole lot of shame and fear mm-hmm. of the judgment that I would receive, and also bringing up the pain and being in tears. And while I was speaking about my story just then, I had some tears, but they were tears of gratitude.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Gratitude for my mother and gratitude for my father for who they are
yeah.
as people
yeah.
mm-hmm.
who have also been damaged
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
and have done the best job that they could with what they had, with yeah. the tools that they had.
I think you said something there that made me realise that you're basically saying that you attached more value to what happened to you than to who you actually were.
Oh, totally.
And so basically you carried this around you with you because that's how you identified yourself, right? And yeah. the thing is that we, you know, we talk about how, like, we've literally sat here on this call and basically just said, you know, that's big for people to comprehend. But isn't it funny that it's big for people to comprehend how magnificent they are regardless of what's happened to them
mm-hmm.
as opposed to carrying it around for them, their lives, because we think that that is the badge of honour. Oh, this happened to me. I'm going to carry it around with me forever. And that there's no – there's like if that's what someone has to do, then that's okay as well. There's nothing wrong with that. But the fact that – we think that is kind of the norm instead of understanding that actually there's a whole new way of seeing things that doesn't make it right, doesn't make it wrong, but gives you the opportunity to stand on the shoulders of whatever happened to you in the past so that you can now live your life from the perspective and the understanding that you are worthy of love no matter what you've done, what's happened to you, who you are worthy of love, you know?
Yeah.
Well, yep. I think, you know, I think sometimes people out there think that's fucking crazy, you know. But what I think is fucking crazy is people spending their lives hating, being resentful their whole fucking life from when they turn up to when they check out, not knowing anything not knowing anything about where they've come from or not knowing anything about what's going to happen to them afterwards. But within this time period that they're conscious, spending that whole time consciously being pissed off. And every human, I haven't met one human being, you'll say the same, Sam, you say the same, I haven't met one human being that doesn't know that there's a better option than that.
Mm.
And what pisses them off the most is they don't know how to get to that option. And so not knowing how to get to that option is a shitty life. And at the end of the day, I think it's fucking ludicrous to spend your life doing that as opposed to saying, no, I was loved.
That's exactly what I was trying to say. Yeah. You just said it in better words.
I was loved. I'm no matter what. Because the minute you see that, I mean, you were told you'll never have kids by three individual practitioners, you'll never have children. As soon as that happened, you took off within a short period of time, a couple of years, and you took off around the world. And now you got a beautiful little girl who we've seen, who's the cutest little thing. And we were just talking about our 5-year or our 4-year olds a minute ago before we came on air. But none of that would have happened if your energy goes into being angry and pissed off about your history.
Yeah, 100%.
You know, because that's shaping your fucking destiny. And if you let go of that history and you find the love, you have the courage to go, no, I'm not going to let this fucking run me anymore. This is running me, and what runs you ruins you. And especially when it's full of resentment and hate and bitterness and twistedness. And it takes from the immortal nature of who you are, which is we are energy and we are love. And when we tap into that energy and that love, that's when we're fucking set free. And then your future, your destiny becomes yours. It literally becomes yours. You can do, be, and have whatever the fuck you want, no matter what practitioner told you what's possible or not possible.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm doing that again with, and I know that this is the knock-on effects for carrying that anger and bitterness and hatred for so long,
mm-hmm.
that I am now treating myself naturally for breast cancer.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I've just turned around and said to the professor at the Eastern Breast and Health at Breast and Cancer Clinic, no, I'm not going to have any poisons put into my body. My body has been poisoned for long enough. I poisoned it with anger, resentment, bitterness. I'm going to deal with this naturally because I already know that on a quantum level I'm healed. My body just needs to catch up from mm-hmm. the 40-odd years of abuse that I put it through.
Mm-hmm. 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 Cool.
There you cool. go.
That's brave. I love that stuff.
Mm, I know. Okay. I was just looking at the girl who's listening to and recording this. She's just gone, whoa, like that was big. So I wasn't laughing at you there, Sam. I was just looking at Tash going, whoa. She's
welcome
like,
to the jungle. Yeah. Do you need more tissues, Tash? Just there's a box just over there.
And look, it's all thanks to you guys. It's all thanks to the work that you have done and for being there to show people that all they need to do is shift their perspective and look at things instead of from the lopsided view, mm-hmm. from the balanced view. And that's all thanks to you guys. So I have so much love and gratitude to you both.
We deeply
and I'm
going to
cry.
of course. I'm already so. crying. like, you know, Sam, the way I see it is that you're my hero, you're our hero, yep. because there are so many people that can go around and just carry that stuff and not be brave enough to look. And the fact that you put yourself in our hands and that you gave yourself, that little girl inside of yourself, that opportunity to look, and you gave that little girl of yours the opportunity to live as a result of shifting your perceptions. To me, you're our hero. We appreciate you and we appreciate your gratitude. But we give it back to you because you're our absolute hero. Anyway, while I cry here, do you want to go on to the next thing?
I do. So, Sam, one of the things
we want to we didn't just have you on for that. We also wanted to dip into your expertise and your understanding of other things as well. So we might get onto that before I cry for the rest of this podcast.
So, I've always had a keen interest. I mean, ever since I can remember thinking for myself, I've always had a keen interest, just to give everybody a bit of history, a keen interest in ancient mysticism, in ancient origins, in ancient civilizations, ancient archaeology. And I just happened to be having a conversation one day about a book by Graham Hancock called Magicians of the Gods. And Sam said, oh, yeah. You know, I can't remember what you said. You met him or you worked under him or you worked for some of his people? You met him, yeah. And it was like, holy shit, did you really? And you were like, yep, met him. And I think at the time you talked to me a little bit about where you had met him, but I didn't pay much attention. And then because I think
that came across really badly to all of the people listening.
No, it's because you're like, fucking boring, Sam. No, you know I'm only taking the piss. No, it was because we were in a seminar and I was in the middle of something.
I get it.
Now, then I realized, shit, because about 2 years ago, we were about to do a run into Turkey. We wanted to get to Göbekli Tepe. And what had happened was I had organized, and we were trying to organize somebody to take us in there, because you have to have a security team to get you in, because word was getting out that based on the Syrian war that the West were going to bomb Göbekli Tepe because they didn't want anybody to know what had been found there. And basically, quick history, what's been found in Göbekli Tepe is basically it's a massive construct. And it happened around about 12,500 years, 12,600 years ago. And when it was built, basically, it's an astral projection. There are monolithic structures there. There are megaliths there. There are stonework over 800 tons, megalithic structures there. And basically, once it was built, they filled it in and they walked away. So as they've uncovered it, what they've uncovered is the fact that it's a time capsule. And that time capsule is talking to us today, is talking to whoever was going to find it and whoever was going to uncover it and go into that dig. And the time capsule is basically talking about an asteroid that makes its way around, and some of that shrapnel has hit the planet at certain time periods and knocked the planet out of sync and created either a great ice age or a great melt, and it tells the history of that. At the same time, I've spent quite a bit of time in Cusco at the navel of the and the navel of the planet. But the navel of the planet, the exact diameter of the planet is between Cusco and Göbekli Tepe, between two exact points between those two places. So I have a huge interest in Graham Hancock's work, and I love Graham Hancock, and I'm sure you do as well. But then I started to hear about these Bosnian pyramids. Now, I'm a bit late to the fucking game, but I started to hear about these Bosnian pyramids. And then it turns out I ring you and I'm like, hey, do you know anything about these Bosnian pyramids? And you're like, yeah, motherfucker, I was there digging that shit out. I'm like, what? So can we talk a little bit about how did you end up in Bosnia?
You can tell he's excited because he doesn't even let you talk, Sam. He's like,
I have to give a brief one.
No, I'm just joking.
Jesus. Go easy, well, Dad. Fucking Tuesday morning, for fuck's sake.
It came actually from doing the STP with you guys.
Really?
Really?
No. Oh, now he's so happy. He's just
scratch
like,
my fucking ear out here.
I can scratch your ear from
you're in Melbourne.
You're in Melbourne.
Oh, fuck. So when I was doing STP, like I had a moment, look, I had a lot of moments when I was doing STP.
Yeah.
And it was one of the moments where I went, oh my God, because I had heard about the Bosnian pyramids. I had just started doing my bachelor's in metaphysical science, and I knew I was already going to be doing the PhD. Mm-hmm. So I was looking for some research material,
right?
And I'm like, it just clicked, like, because I hadn't given myself permission. And it just clicked. Mm-hmm. I am going there. I am going to work there. I'm going to work there for a full season.
Yeah.
I don't care how. I'm doing it.
Yeah.
And I just knew I was doing it. So I sold everything I owned. I'm like, that's it. I'm going. I'm going to go and live in Bosnia for 4.5 months.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to go and teach English somewhere for a year, and then I'm going to go back, and I was going to country hop, basically. Yeah. Go and teach English and then go back to Bosnia and work, and then go teach English and back to Bosnia and work.
Right.
And I got there just as I was just going to be a standard volunteer for the whole season, because they have opened it up to volunteers to come and just work. So most volunteers are doing like carting wheelbarrows, brushing through things when they're taught what to do from the archaeologists.
Mm-hmm.
But because I was there for the whole season, and because I was also studying it, I got to get very close with the head archaeologist, Tim Moon. And I ended up basically supervising the volunteers at Ravna, which is the underground labyrinth complex.
Wow. Fuck off. You just said labyrinth.
Yeah.
So just let me ask a couple of questions about Tim. So how does modern archaeology feel about Tim?
Because he has worked with the Bosnian pyramids, they believe he's a renegade.
Right. Right.
So it's like archaeology is a boys' club.
Right.
And if you don't, toe the line.
Yeah.
Then you're out.
They take your funding and they demonize you and turn you into, because you're not fitting their narrative.
Exactly.
So just before we head there, tell me what you think. Why do you think that is? I mean, it seems now, right, that their narrative is so fucking ludicrous. Like they just ignore what is right in front of them.
So you need to talk to the plebs here. Explain what you mean by all of that.
Well, do you want to have a go, Sam? Or I mean, I can have a go. But
you need to explain it so that we.
So modern archaeology has this narrative that they want all archaeologists to fall into. Mm-hmm. If you don't meet their narrative, they cut your funding and then they demonize you. So if you come up with a discovery that says, listen, the Sphinx is way older than 4,500 years. Yeah. Why? Because there's fucking watermarks say that it's been through not one flood, but many floods.
Yeah.
If you say, hey, there's a second fucking Sphinx in Pakistan, they come in and they just poo-poo you because they say, no, this is what we've taught everybody.
Mm-hmm.
So what intrigues me is the further I look into it is, why are they so set on this narrative?
Well, there's a couple. That's a big rabbit hole.
I know.
There, right there.
I know.
There's a couple of viewpoints you could take. You need to quite often. You need to follow the money.
Yeah.
Mm.
Who's funding the research?
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
And what is their reasons for funding the research?
Mm-hmm. And what do you think it is?
Well. When you look at some of them, it's religion-based.
Mm-hmm.
We need to make sure that this stuff is backing up the Bible
mm-hmm.
or the Quran mm-hmm. or whichever religion. Generally, it's the Bible because it's generally the Roman Catholic Church that do tend to have the money.
Mm-hmm.
So when they say that the pyramids are, 4,000 years in – like that's just to basically fit the narrative of what, is being forced down people's throats,
mm-hmm.
which is just a mechanism of control.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, I
putting on my tinfoil hat now.
Yeah. But I mean, this is the problem, right? This is one of the fucking problems is the minute you go question it, they say you've got a tinfoil hat on, which mm-hmm. is very fucking convenient. At the end of the day, like yes. it's really convincing.
Because it's easy to make someone look crazy for going against the narrative.
That's right. And now you're a conspiracy theorist, because you're questioning the fucking narrative. But when I was in the Americas, I was with one of our shamans who we've known him for a very long time. And he takes us well over 11 years, takes us to some extraordinary places in the Americas. And, I said to him, he said, when the Spanish arrived here, Mitch, he said, this place was a metropolis. He said, when you're driving through these mountains here and you're looking at all of these terraces, he said, these terraces were rich in color and fruit and they had mastered, aquatics and water and they had, they were using processes of thermodynamics. He said it was a metropolis and the Spanish turned up here and were like, if anybody in the West sees this technology and what these people have managed to do, they will see that their shamans, their chiefs, their educators are smarter than our Christ. Uh-huh. So what we have to do is we have to basically get them all to get on our side and we have to destroy all this. And like history shows that the destruction within those areas only happened, a little bit. It started a little bit before the Spanish arrived, which was about 270 years. I asked him that question as well. Why do you believe the civilization fell apart? And he said to me, his answers to me were because they knew the Spanish were coming. And I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about? They knew the Spanish were coming. How would they know the Spanish were coming? He said, well, he said they didn't know the Spanish were coming, but they knew they were coming to the end of an age. And the beginning of another age. And I'm like, right. And he goes, so that age was an age of destruction. And part of the destruction hadn't hit here yet.
Mm-hmm.
So they knew that the Spanish were coming or something was coming. And so the civilization fell apart about 270 years before, but it got way worse as soon as the Spanish turned up because the Spanish just turned up and just raped and pillaged and just took everything. And then the British turned up and they did even worse. I mean, you've been there with us. You've seen this stuff. So it seems like that narrative, they're willing to do whatever it takes to hold that narrative. But now information is so accessible you know, and you can go there. Like, I was just watching some stats last year where we were talking, where they were saying that, you know, the general public can pull up to this Bosnian pyramid and they can excavate. Literally, they're turning up and excavating. So archaeologists are staying away because they don't want to go there and ruin their career because they're not strong enough and powerful enough to stand up. But there was over 3,000 artifacts pulled out of that area last year alone. That's just last year, by ordinary mums, dads, pops, people like Sam, people like you, me. Anybody can turn up there and start excavating and pulling out artifacts. Yeah. So when you were telling me about being in these tunnels, tell me about that.
Well, there's so many mysteries surrounding these tunnels, and it's clear that they are man-made.
Right.
For one.
Right. And let me ask this question. Are they pyramids, Sam?
Without a question, without a doubt, right. They are definitely pyramids.
Right.
I mean, there are a lot of locals who, when Samir first arrived and said, nope, this is a pyramid, they've then looked, because they called what they're now calling Pyramid of Sunsa, which is Pyramid of the Sun, they called it Visočica Hill.
Right.
And they just knew it as the place where the last Bosnian king and queen were crowned. Right. Because there's an old fort, an old castle, the remains of it are on the top.
Mm.
So they just knew it as that. And then when he said, no, it's a pyramid, probably half the town went, oh, my God, I can't believe I never saw it before. I've been looking at this thing for my whole damn life and I never saw that it was a pyramid. It's right there in front of me.
Wow.
How can I not have seen that?
Mm-hmm.
Insane.
Yeah. And then the other half of the town are like, don't be stupid. It's Visočica Hill.
but isn't it? So they were Roman remains. Is that right? That castle is a Roman. No.
So the castle is Bosnian remains. It's the castle, they call it Stari Grad, which means old town.
Right.
It was where the last Bosnian king and queen were actually crowned.
Right.
There are Roman remains in the areas as well. So this whole area, it's almost like the Palestine of Europe. It has been fought over that many times. So there've been Roman remains, Dacian remains.
Right.
It's been held by the Austro-Hungarians. It's been held by the Ottoman era. So it's an area that's been taken over and taken over and taken over.
Mm-hmm.
So really anywhere in Bosnia is an archaeologist's wet dream because wherever you dig, you're going to find something.
Right.
It's just so rich in history, which is something we don't have so much of in Australia.
Mm, yeah.
So how many pyramids?
Well, they believe probably about 12 within the valley, but they've confirmed the Pyramid of the Sun, Pyramid of the Dragon, Pyramid of the Moon, Pyramid of Love, and Pyramid of Water.
Mm-hmm.
And they've also, there's a shape that's kind of like a crescent moon shape that is man-made, which they have called Temple of Mother Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also, even on that particular shape, there are Neolithic, like the remains of Neolithic homes.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. And they were saying, like, how I originally got onto it was they were talking about, I watched a piece talking about the waterways.
Mm-hmm.
And the waterways are supposed to be all man-made, and incredible. Like the feats, like even today, they're saying, like, we don't have the technology to be able to do what they were doing with water. Their understanding of the use of water was just insane.
Yeah.
Did you see any of that?
Yes, actually. So, and I was actually part of another discovery that I was in a section because it's very wet in the tunnels, and I was part of the wheelbarrow chain just filling a spot. Mm-hmm. And I just happened to be looking up at the little water droplets dropping down from the roof, and I was just watching this water droplet getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and I'm like, okay, that's going to drop. And it didn't. It just shrunk back up. I'm like, the heck was that?
Right.
The fuck? That's not normal. Right. And then I watched it and I went, it's happening again. So I went and got Tim, and we had this little running joke because, like, a lot of people would come up to him with stuff and go, this is really awesome. And he'd go, no, it's nothing, like, because right. Everyone's really excited. Yeah. And I go, you've got to come and have a look
at
this.
That would be Mitch 24/7 over there.
Tim, I think I found a toilet. No, that's been there, mate. We brought that in.
And it's really hard not to, right? Yeah. But I went up to him and said, Tim, you've got to have a look at this. And he goes, oh, what is it now, Sammy? Right. And I'm like, come and have a look. And I didn't want to sway what he saw by telling him.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
So I just said, look at the water. And he goes, yeah, it's droplets. Nice. Hallelujah. You've just found, you know, all of the secrets. And I go, just watch it, would you? And right. He watched it and he's watching it and he's watching it. He goes, well, fuck me.
Right.
We then had – he had a specialist cameraman come out who had like a macro lens that he right. could go like mm-hmm. and sort of like – it was almost like having a microscope on his camera, so yeah. He was able to really zoom in on it. And what we were watching when he filmed it in this little water droplet was it looked like cell division happening within the water droplet.
Right.
And then – like, and as the water droplet's getting bigger and bigger, there's more cell division happening, more and more and more and more and more. And then pew, little shoots of energy shooting out of the water, and that's when it shrunk up.
Wow.
And we're like, what the fuck is that?
My God.
In those tunnels, the presence of oxygen, the density of oxygen is just through the roof. They're really? Making their own oxygen.
Really?
Like 2.5 kilometers in from the surface. Like, I don't know if you know anything about mines or anything. Normally you would have to wear breathing apparatus or there'd have to be some kind of machinery pumping oxygen down so that you could breathe.
Right.
No, fresh air.
Really?
Fresh air. I kid you not.
Wow.
And so were you 2.5 kilometers in?
Yes.
Holy shit.
Yes.
Because I've made that work in doing exactly that. You know, as you go down, they have air tunnels, and their job is to get air in and get air out, is to get flow within that depth. Really? Was it warm or cold?
It was a cool. It sat at around 12.5 degrees
mm-hmm.
all year round.
Right.
So in summer it was a nice cool relief. And in winter, because the temperature can get below 40 there,
mm-hmm.
it's warm, right?
Wow.
Yeah. But here's the kicker, Mitch. The whole area is 12.5 degrees standard, but the water temperature is 10 degrees. How the fuck does that work?
So it only drops by 2 degrees.
No, the water temperature is a standard 10.
Oh, standard.
The area in there, so the water in the tunnels
right.
is 10.
All the time.
But the tunnels are 12.5. Would not the water be the same temperature as the tunnels? As the
tunnels, yeah. Mm. Wow. So tell me, what do they think it is? What's the purpose of it?
Well, there's a lot of theories, and I think that Samir's theory has a lot, like, it holds a lot of weight.
So this is Sam Osmanagic, is that right? Is that how I pronounce it?
Yeah, Dr. Samir Osmanagic.
My God, he's taken a kicking. That chap has taken a kicking. But he's got a set of nuts on him. Like, he's just found his love. Like, he'll be dead. He'll be found dead there. They'll never get him out of the place. He just loves it.
He is just incredible.
Right.
He's incredible, and he takes every single kicking, and he doesn't care. Because he knows what he knows, and he knows it.
Mm.
Right.
I like that.
And there's no swaying him.
Right. So what do they think it is? Let's get back to that. What?
So he believes that pyramids all over the world are actually not tombs, as the narrative would have you believe.
Yeah.
Because no mummies have ever been found in pyramids. They've been found in tombs, not pyramids.
Pyramids, yeah.
He believes that they are energy machines.
Right.
And that the reason being, most pyramids on the planet are now dead.
Yeah.
Because in order for the pyramid to be an energy machine, it needs an underground water source.
Right. So does he believe that that's an active pyramid?
Yes.
Because of the water source?
Yes.
Right.
And what we saw in that filming of the energy shooting out, something, you've probably heard of the phenomena of orbs and people poo-hooing it, saying it's just dust on the lens or it's a camera, like lens flare or whatever. Mm-hmm. I can tell you now from my experience, they are real. There probably are also some experiences where it is lens flare or whatever. Mm-hmm. But there was a point where after I'd been there for a while, my vision changed so I could actually see them.
Really?
In my peripheral vision, not in my forward vision.
Mm-hmm.
I would see them shoot down beside me.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't just shoot in one direction. They would shoot this way, that way, and across.
Right.
So there's an intelligence there. It's not just dust being blown in by a breeze or a wind or whatever. And 2.5 kilometers in,
not much
like,
wind.
Tell me there's a breeze anyway, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
But we could breathe. So I did this experiment where I said, okay, I don't know exactly what you are, but I'm going to call you orbs because that's what everyone names you.
Mm-hmm.
If you can hear me and if you're intelligent, show yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden I could see a whole lot all in front of me.
Wow.
And then there was this one, it was like it was being playful.
Right.
And it would shoot left to right in front of my eyes. I'm saying the left to right because I realize I'm doing this with my finger, but you're
listening to that and
see that. So it's like sort of zigzagging in front of me and then it would just go and shoot off.
Right.
And it's like that is not something that is just nothing. Like that can, there's an intelligence there.
Was anybody else reporting or seeing this stuff?
Oh, lots of people. Like there's so many people who have got footage of orbs and there's a lot of footage on YouTube of people who, when they've been in the tunnels, like they've even got a spot in the tunnels with, that they call the orb chamber.
Right.
Because there seem to be there's a lot of activity of orbs
right
in that area.
So are they excavating those those tunnels or are they just is it just an endless labyrinth of tunnels or?
Yes. So they've done LIDAR scans and ground penetrating radar to see exactly where they are because at some point in history those tunnels were filled.
Right.
And Samir believes that they were filled on purpose.
Right.
And it looks kind of clear that way. I mean, a lot of people are trying to say, oh, it's just been flood, but there are intact dry walls that are in between two lots of fill material.
Right.
Right.
And these dry walls are like stacked stones.
Right.
Nature doesn't do that.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Right. And then have you seen any of the artifacts that have been pulled out? What are they pulling out?
Okay, so I haven't seen what they've found in the last couple of years because I was there in 2014.
Yep.
So a lot of it's mostly stone.
Right.
Because what you've got to realize is it's a wet environment and the age of it, so the organic material that they've pulled out and they did radiocarbon dating on is 29,000 plus or minus 700 years.
Right. Yeah.
So those tunnels had to have been there at least that long.
So are they, when they're aging it, are they at the standard mercy of carbon dating? So could they be way, way, way older?
Oh, they could be way older because that's a piece of organic material that has been found inside the tunnel.
Mm-hmm. So just can you just describe how when they do carbon dating, why they're at the mercy of a certain amount of time? You can only carbon date back so far.
Okay, so they're looking for a radioactive isotope called C14.
Yep.
And when they look back in history, there's only so far that they can go back. Like it's about 50,000 years before there is none of that radioactive isotope present.
Right.
So when they get to 50,000 years, they can't go beyond that with C14 dating because there is no C14 past that. So when they say something is 50,000 years old, it could be 50,000 years old or it could be 200 million years old.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it could, it's
they just don't know.
Anybody's guessed past that.
Right.
There are other ways of dating things. I'm just not really down on the science of those.
So I know that there's
with the other, there's 12 pyramids. Some of them are on existing farmers' land and you can't mm-hmm. get into them.
Yep.
So, I mean, has there been anybody in there? Has anybody got in? Do they know? Has Sam got in? Are there waterways? Are there waterways in there?
Yes, there's waterways in the tunnels, but no one's actually got into the pyramid itself yet.
Right.
They're doing excavations on the outside and they've done some like samples of the material that the pyramid has been made from.
Mm-hmm.
And it's man-made concrete, like an ancient concrete, and it's stronger than any concrete that man can make today.
So it's so the material is man-made?
Yes. Jeez. It's like, and it looks like, it looks quite crude when you look at it because there's lots of like stone chips and bits within it.
Yeah.
But it's so solid.
Right.
And I don't know the exact numbers, but when they were having a look at it, it's the way that it's been bound, it had to have been heated to a certain number of degrees in Kelvin.
Right.
Now, when we're talking about Kelvin measurements, we're talking about the sun.
Wow. Kind of heat.
Jesus. We're not talking about the sort of heat that, you know, what is supposed to be Neolithic men from what they say is that time period
yeah.
could make with a fire. Mm. Like they could replicate that today, but not on the scale.
Of the size of the stones.
Yeah.
Wow. So what was the craziest thing?
I was just about to ask that, actually.
We'll finish up in a minute. But what was the craziest thing? Top three coolest or craziest things you can tell us from your experience there.
Oh, gosh, top three. Top three? I have to limit it to top
I can
three.
Make it seven.
okay, so, well, one is we found that I found a little tiny crystal, quartz crystal,
mm-hmm.
and it was like about the size of a 5-cent piece, maybe a little bit bigger.
Mm-hmm.
And inside it, like it had been drilled out and it was filled and it looked like it was filled with rust. Now, remember, it's very wet and it's very old.
Yeah.
So that would have been iron.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So I showed this to Tim and I went, I don't know about this. We need to check with the geologist, but, quartz and iron, do they – grow together?
Yeah.
And the geologist said, absolutely, positively not.
Yeah.
And there's no way it could be, and it was like packed in. So they sent that off to the lab.
Yeah.
Because they're like, well, this then would be iron before the Bronze Age. Like that's not right either.
Right.
But it wasn't even just iron. It was an iron alloy.
Wow.
Like... an iron alloy. So they're basically, they were creating energy because when you put quartz crystal under a load, it's got the piezoelectric effect.
Right.
So it actually creates electricity.
My God.
So they were somehow creating some form of energy or electricity by using quartz and an iron alloy.
Shit. That's insane.
Mm-hmm.
That's insane. And no idea of age, obviously. Again, it could be.
Yeah, exactly. Because the material that they're finding is they've found it within the structure, in the tunnels, and they've also found some between the blocks
right.
of the pyramid. So, and that was a fossil of a leaf. Now, that leaf could have fallen down in between the blocks while it was being built right. or way after it was built. So it's really right. hard to tell. It is at least that age because right. those things have then appeared within it.
Right, right, it's right.
way older.
Right. That's crazy. Isn't it? And to think, the guys that were laying the blocks, one of the guys could have gone, Mick, just brush that leaf out, will you? Don't let that. But they didn't. And the fact that they left it in there. Okay, second most crazy-ass thing, Sam.
Okay, so the second most craziest thing, you were asking about the water
yeah.
and the channels.
Yeah.
So the channels themselves, I have seen many of them with my own eyes, and they are at right angles. They are like proper, like down, like a squared off right angles. Nature doesn't bloody do that.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
that's another thing. Not only is it incredible, it's another proof that they are what Samir is saying that they are.
So, and then, so when you say this, you're a kilometer in, you're seeing this a kilometer in. You're, as you continue to move, it's not like they're rounded as water would come through with other stones and rocks and, you know, bombard. So they're
above you is rounded, but down below. So the channels are on in the ground.
Yeah.
Like, so where we were walking.
Mm.
And most of those areas have been covered and cleared away, and the public aren't allowed to walk through them because they want to preserve them.
Right.
Because they are definite right angles, like the old Roman canals.
Yeah.
And the water is crystal clear.
Wow.
No microbes.
Wow.
No anything.
Right.
No algae, no mold, no microbes, no radiation, nothing. Just pure crystal clean water.
Can you drink it?
Yes. It's actually really healing. And they actually sent some of the water to Masaru Emoto.
Right.
Oh,
in Japan, yeah.
Yes, so they've got photos all up around Ravna to show what the Ravna water looks like as water crystals. Under the
microscope, yeah.
And it is just so beautiful.
Wow. Yeah. Cool. Wow. And then can you see down? And when you look down, are there right angles at the bottom of whatever? Yes, yes, there is. And yes, is that all the way through?
It's in certain parts. There are other parts where the water is just laying in spots.
Right.
But the water always stays at the one level too.
Wow. Wow.
So it doesn't go up or down. It's at the same level.
Wow.
Right. Oh, because of rainwater, it doesn't go up and down.
No.
Right.
No.
Jesus, that's crazy.
So it's like they have hit the water table or the aquifers.
Yeah.
The water table, because it stays at the one constant, and it stays at that constant temperature.
Is there any relation to the our galaxy?
Cassiopeia.
Right. Mm. That's the it's an astral projection of that?
It's full in a full alignment with Cassiopeia.
With Cassiopeia, okay.
Yeah.
Wow. Very good. And then your last and final one. I don't know how the fuck you're going to beat those two. Your last and final one.
Gosh. So that would actually have to be, and this is a little story in itself.
Yeah.
Are you familiar with Reiki and how, it was rebirthed?
Yes. True. Asui.
Yes. Dr. Asui.
That's right. Yeah.
And how he meditated and the symbols came to him.
Yes.
Okay, so, and this is probably the biggest mind-blowing thing, Mitch.
Yeah.
I was meditating and on top of the Pyramid of the Sun in the spot where the physicists have proven that there is an energy beam coming out. I was meditating in that spot. And I could see in my meditation off in the distance this bright electric purple light.
Yeah.
And it was coming towards me. And as it was getting bigger and bigger, it became a symbol.
Right.
And I had that symbol tattooed on my wrist.
Get out of here, girlfriend. I did. I've been looking at your wrist. I can see it. Yes.
Yes. So I got that symbol, and I am a Reiki and Seishin master.
Yep.
And I felt it was like my healing channeling ability just went through the roof, and it was like it was on steroids.
Wow.
And then from that site to all the other sites I went to and meditated on, and I've downloaded more symbols.
Have you?
So, yes. So this healing system is about to be birthed out into the world. I'm just busy writing it all up right now.
Cool.
Wow, cool.
Yeah.
Well, you're going to have to keep us posted on that one.
Oh, definitely. Definitely.
That's so cool.
Now, I still want to go there now. I'm just like, as soon as I can get on a plane, that's one of the places I want to go to. Drag the kids to Bosnia. Come on, kids. Let's go. Here's your gun. Come to Bosnia.
Well, if you're going, let me know, because I've got all the contacts there. Like, Bosnia is now my second home, even though I haven't been back.
Right.
It's my home, and yeah. I know so many people there. And the town of Visoko, which is where everything is, I know half the town.
Great.
That's cool.
I'm going to be hitting you for that, I can tell you what. Sam, we might even drag it along.
Sam, we love this. Thank you so much for your time and for your just for being you, to be honest. It was really good. And I know Mitch was really excited to be able to talk to you about all that stuff. Some of that still goes over my head. I need to ask more and more questions. So we would have been on this podcast for about 3 hours if I had interjected too much, because I was like, I don't understand.
Oh, I'm happy to answer.
Absolutely.
That's cool.
I think that's it. We better leave it at that, because we've been going for a while. But just Sam, to finish off, just cover off for me the one thing that you're most grateful for in your life altogether. Just so that we've got something to finish off on.
The one thing I'm most grateful for my
life. Yeah, right now, where you're at.
Right now where I'm at is, well, it's actually perception and the ability to change my perception at any time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
And to shift that perception to see things from a different perspective.
Yes. You know what? I have to agree with that. I like that. I was sat down and did an equilibration last night, and it's like so good to be able to just go to have that in your power, to be able to go, I've been seeing this, and the way I'm seeing this, I know is lopsided. I'm putting too much energy into one side of this. I have the power to change that and to look and see it as a whole instead of seeing it as lopsided. So that's awesome. Sam, thank you so much. We love you. We appreciate you. And we're grateful that you gave us this time. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Sam.
See you soon.
Thank you.
If you found this information inspiring, make sure you subscribe and tune in to the next Dorothy and the Dealer podcast.